Welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, it all started with suspicions about a massage parlor in South Florida. That concern prompted a sprawling investigation. It ended in the bust of what authorities say is a multi-million dollar human trafficking and prostitution ring, one that stretches from Florida to New York to China. And among the men busted, New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft.
Yeah, the billionaire NFL owner now faces misdemeanor charges, along with John Havens, former president and chief operating officer of Citigroup, and John Childs, founder of the private equity firm J.W. Childs Associates. Now, police believe that women were brought from China under false promises of new lives and legitimate jobs at spas. Instead, prosecutors say they found themselves trapped as virtual sex slaves, trafficking victims trapped among South Florida's rich and famous.
That's right, Tom. Florida is a hotbed for this kind of hideous exploitation of human beings in both sex and labor trafficking, by the way. In fact, this state ranks third in the nation in the number of cases authorities are tracking. We're going to begin the hour this Friday here on the Florida Roundup with a closer look at the issue of human trafficking in the Sunshine State. As we welcome Julie Brown of the Miami Herald joining us from WLRN Studios in Miami, and Mary Helen Moore, she's with USA Today's Florida Network, and T.C. Palm joining from member station WQCS. And wherever you are in the state, give us a call as we talk about this trafficking sting that netted Patriots owner Robert Kraft and others. The number to join the roundup, 305-995-1800, or tweet us at Florida Roundup. Let's begin with you, Julie Brown. You've been writing about this issue of trafficking, not only with this most recent bust, but also the extraordinary story of convicted billionaire Jeffrey Epstein of Palm Beach, who's been accused of molesting dozens of underage girls. A federal judge ruled just the other day that prosecutors violated the rights of Epstein's victims by failing to inform them about a plea deal that essentially gave him a slap on the wrist for sex trafficking charges. So whether it's Epstein or Robert Kraft, what we see here in Florida is powerful men abusing vulnerable trafficked women, great numbers of them. Tell us a little bit, as we learn about this new sting, about how deep the problem goes, not just in Florida, but really we're part of a worldwide transnational network, correct?
Yeah, Florida is sort of the gateway to Latin America and to some other countries. So a lot of it comes through Florida, but of course, it's all over the country. And I think what these all have in common is that they usually involved poor, disadvantaged women who are taking advantage of desperate people who really want to try to start a new life. In the case of the bust that happened up in Palm Beach recently, and then there are even at home traffickers, sort of just within Florida, as the Epstein case shows, of girls that are just living in poor circumstances. Foster homes and other, homelessness situations, who also fall trap into these kinds of situations. So there's a whole range of sex trafficking that's going on here.
Mary Helen Moore, let me ask you, what's the latest? It's been a week now since these charges that we first learned about, these misdemeanor solicitation for prostitution charges against Robert Kraft and others. The lead prosecutor in Palm Beach County came out in front of cameras and microphones on Monday and detailed some of these cases and talked about kind of this web of allegations of human trafficking stretching across from South Florida up to Orlando to New York and across the world to China.
Right. So on February 19th, we saw these 10 spas shut down, and there's a couple in the Orlando area. We saw them throughout Indian River and Martin counties and down into Jupiter. And so, like you said, these women are being held in sex slavery. We're getting some new details over the past week and a half about what they were truly facing. You know, they're living inside these spas, sleeping on cots. There's a makeshift shower, maybe a microwave or a crock pot, and they're forced to work as prostitutes from 9 a.m., until midnight, maybe. And so we're learning more details about where they came from. For example, in the Vero Beach case, one of the victims, she was a U.S. citizen, but she speaks only Mandarin. And so she was living in New York. She had a massage therapy license. She answered a job on a Chinese language job website. Someone drove her from New York to Florida, and she's stuck here. So they don't have cars, and they're told not to go outside, don't speak to authorities. And so now, really, what authorities, law enforcement, and prosecutors both are trying to do is get these women to work with them.
And women, Julie, are afraid sometimes to speak with authorities for a number of reasons. They're afraid their family members in their home country might be threatened. They're afraid of facing criminal charges. There are a number of dynamics going on here that prey on vulnerable girls and young women. Whether they're the women that were recruited by Jeffrey Epstein, which you covered so magnificently in the Miami Herald, or they're part of a multinational network being brought into this country under false pretenses. How do you rate law enforcement response to this? Because as you've reported, Epstein essentially faced a slap on the wrist the prosecutors that were involved in his case have come under scrutiny themselves.
Well, it's interesting. I think that because of what happened in recent months and even over the past couple of years with Epstein's case getting so much attention, I do think that it has caused law enforcement to pay closer attention to how they handle these cases. And I do think that's the reason in part that this case up in Palm Beach involving Robert Kraft got the press conference treatment. In other words, the cops and the attorneys, the prosecutors had all these press conferences. Look what we have. Look what we're doing. We're busting this huge sex trafficking operation. And by the way, we got the owner of the New England Patriots. I would think years before this whole Epstein thing, we might not have ever known that Kraft was among the Johns here involved. So I think that they're making an effort to go after these sex traffickers more aggressively. But I also have I'm a little skeptical about the way that they handled the Kraft case.
What's your skepticism? And I'm curious, Julie, about the focus, rightfully or wrongfully, on the prostitution solicitation, the Johns, as opposed to the charges that may be coming regarding human trafficking.
Well, I don't know what else they have in their investigative file in Palm Beach on this case. And certainly I'm not a law enforcement officer, but I've been following these cases for long enough to know that normally this isn't something that you follow the Johns around for 6 months on a case like this. I would expect that they should have gotten some people to follow the trail of the sex traffickers themselves, and they should have, to be in a position now where they don't even have anybody who was sex trafficked cooperating with them. It says to me that they didn't really do their investigation into the sex traffickers. They must have been doing it into focusing more on the Johns, which don't get me wrong, I believe that they should pay a price as well. But the sex traffickers, and I've always felt this way with these big press conferences that they hold all over Florida, getting a John here and there. I've always felt that they've never seemed to follow the trail of where this all starts and try to get the real people that are making huge amounts of money and really making these people suffer.
Billions of dollars made around the world off the buying and selling of human beings for prostitution, for labor. Yes, there are labor slaves here in Florida, too. We want your calls. It's 305-995-1800 and tweet us at Florida Roundup as we talk about the issue of trafficking. Mary Helen Moore with USA Today, Florida Network, and TC Palm. What is going to happen to the women that were discovered in this spa, the one in South Florida, the ones in Central Florida, being held basically as prisoners, not allowed to leave, forced to have sex with hundreds of men a week. What is their status now?
Right. So it's interesting. There are two women that we know of right now that are in shelters. The majority of women who were working in these operations, they're in jail right now. And law enforcement is trying, they say, to get them to cooperate. And when you get to the human trafficking aspect, right, they have videos of the prostitution. They don't have videos necessarily or records that prove the human trafficking. The evidence are these witnesses. So they need these girls, these women, to tell them what happened to them. And so that's really right. Where the energy is going.
And often they're afraid to talk. Later in the hour, we'll talk about how organizations such as the Dolores Barweaver Policy Center are working to change the law enforcement apparatus and not punish victims of trafficking with charges, with a criminal record. But lots of calls coming into the Florida Roundup as we talk about this. Let's go to Steve in West Palm Beach first off. Hi, Steve. Good afternoon. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I was wondering how they obtain videos, whether or not the actual establishment was videoing and they confiscated them, or if law enforcement went in and put in the cameras in order to videotape the clients. And is that against people's First Amendment rights? I mean, if people went in there and unrobed and got a regular massage with no other, hanky-panky, then won't they have legal rights to sue the police department if they're the ones that actually did the videotaping?
Okay, so how police went about this, Mary Helen Moore, what about that question?
Right. So what we've seen, these investigations began really in July and August for the most part. So the police surveilled these places for a while. They saw men coming in, going in and staying for a short while. After a few months, they spoke to some of these men, or after a few weeks, rather, they spoke to some of these men who told them what was going on. And then they got warrants from a judge to install these cameras. So they installed the cameras themselves. They're not telling us right now exactly how they did that. But the reason, to get back to what Julie was saying previously, it is a balancing act between how long you take and how you know that there are women who will slip through your fingers. I mean, we know. They know at any given time there's only going to be a handful of women inside. They also know that the victims are moved around often, a couple days for some, maybe 3 weeks for others. But they want the strongest case that they can build. So the level of evidence you need to get these so-called sneak and peek warrants is very high, and that's something that I think we want to be a high bar as American citizens.
Mary, do prosecutors and law enforcement have the language skills to engage with the women who are alleged to have been trafficked in this case?
No, they really don't. So none of the agencies that were involved have any Mandarin or Cantonese speaking officers or deputies. And so they're relying on translators, which is, as you can imagine, an obstacle.
Julie Brown.
I'm just shaking. We're shaking our head here.
We're a week into this, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, they were doing this. Y'all to forgive me, Mary. I haven't followed every detail like you have. But, I mean, my understanding is they were doing this for 6 months. They couldn't find some kind of a law enforcement person anywhere who could speak the language.
I don't know.
I mean, obviously, so, it's a rhetorical question. But, that's part of the problem.
I think that it shows the limits of law enforcement agencies in trying to crack this massive global billion-dollar industry of really pure evil, Julie. This is such a tough nut to crack. Federal authorities work on this all the time, too. But it's only when a bold-faced name gets caught up in a sting that it temporarily focuses the public's attention on it. When a powerful man is arrested, then we You know, we start to see more attention paid, but this is going on right under our noses in Florida all the time. You know, if you go into a business, and I'm not just talking about sexually related sex slavery. If you go into a business in Florida and, you know, whether it's a restaurant, maybe a nail salon, a number of businesses, there is a chance sometimes that the people that are serving you are have been trafficked. And all of us as American citizens, you know, we need to become more aware of this. And we need to realize that it's going on right under our noses in a variety of contexts, Julie.
Yeah. It's something that we really count on our law enforcement and the criminal justice system to really, you know, enforce and to look into. And of course, their resources are thin. And in many cases, and I could see it in other cases I've covered, you know, for example, maybe they didn't want to spend the money to get a person in law enforcement who speaks that language. I'm sure that was probably a hard thing to do. In other words, you have to invest the money and the time to really, you know, topple these kinds of complicated sex trafficking operations.
Let me bring in a caller from South Florida and South Miami, Monica on line 6. Monica, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. As the lady said, we have to be more aware. But when we are aware, what can we do about it? This is, you guys are talking about the massage parlors being investigated, and I see those in plain sight often. So what can we do, and why are these allowed to be in plain sight? It's harder for us to be aware of people working in restaurants, mm-hmm. maybe being trafficked, but these places are in plain sight.
Monica, great question. And Mary Helen Moore, I know in the prosecution's case in Jupiter and elsewhere, they cite online accounts or ratings that use coded language to indicate to others that the kind of illicit activity that these massage parlors offered. So to Monica, you know, if you suspect something, what can somebody do? Mary Helen Moore?
Oh, if you expect something, I mean, if you suspect something, the first obstacle, I think, is suspecting something at all. Because as the caller said, you know, this is in plain sight for a reason, because it's hard to know. You'll see the signs that we've been told to look for. If you go to a business or you live near a business and you don't see people with cars that are leaving or going anywhere. You know, you go to work and you go out, step out for lunch. If you don't see that, that's a sign. If somebody's wearing the same clothes over and over,
right,
that's a sign.
Looking for anything that seems a little out of the ordinary. Let me take this moment too. I mean, we've heard for years now, if you see something, say something. If you don't know what to do or who to call, someone just called and said, how do I help with this? What do I do? If you suspect trafficking, call the National Human Trafficking Hotline. The number is 1-888-373-7888. Call that if you suspect trafficking. And also, we're going to talk about other avenues of reporting. Thank you so much, Julie Brown of the Miami Herald and Mary Helen Moore with USA Today's Florida Network and T.C. Palm, both joining us. And in a moment, what activists and policymakers are doing in Florida to combat this issue as we discuss human trafficking this Friday on the Florida Roundup with your tweets at Florida Roundup. And keep those calls coming at 305-995-1800. Much more still ahead. What could be done about this? We'll look at that in just a moment. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. We are continuing our conversation around human trafficking here in the Sunshine State. Policymakers and activists have been trying to change some laws and the culture here in Florida so that people are no longer bought and sold Jamie Rosland became homeless as a teenager and was eventually trafficked. She now tries to help women trying to escape those traffickers.
I faced a lot of vulnerabilities in my life. I came out of an intimate partner abuse relationship. You know, I ended up homeless. You know, I had all these things going on, and there was a whole system. There was a whole network of traffickers and buyers, purchasers of sex who were ready to capitalize on those vulnerabilities and coerce me into doing things I just never dreamed of doing as a little girl.
Jamie Rosland now works as a survivor mentor with the Dolores Barr Weaver Policy Center in Jacksonville. The center is a forefront across the nation in combating human trafficking and other exploitation of women and girls. They've created a new program in Florida. It's called the Open Doors Outreach Network. When a survivor is identified, they're immediately paired with a mentor who's also a survivor, like Jamie, a regional advocate, and a clinician. Vicki Basra is Senior Vice President with the Dolores Barr Weaver Policy Center, joining us from WJCT in Jacksonville. And in a moment, we'll go to your calls here on the Florida Roundup about human trafficking. It's 305-995-1800. Tweet us at Florida Roundup. And Vicki, let's begin by noting that your organization, on Twitter, it's called See the Girl, at See the Girl, just tweeted the show asking, why are the women being held in jail? The women that were caught up in the sting in South and Central Florida, the women that have been trafficked and were forced to sexually service NFL Patriots owner Robert Kraft, allegedly, and hundreds of other men. These women are being held in jail after being forced into this horrible situation. Your organization is trying to change the way law enforcement handles these cases. Can you explain how?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that's really shocking is in the when they did their statement, law enforcement actually said, you know, made a really great statement about, you know, this is not a victimless crime. And I think that really impressed me. And now to hear that they were able to recognize that these women are victims, but yet they've locked these women that they're defining as victims, that they've locked these women up because prostitution is still seen as illegal in this state, is really sad.
Tell me a little bit about what the center does to work with law enforcement to change that paradigm, find a new path for trafficking victims, and also how this new Open Doors Network is operating in the state.
So what we do is we actually work with law enforcement and the judicial system to provide alternatives for women, help them get involved in other systems, whether it is therapy, whether it is other programs that can provide them the actual services that they need. The Open Doors Network, which was provided through Voices for Florida, it's a statewide network. It is now, I'm happy to say, in 30 counties, is available to girls and young women. And it is a program that provides support through, as you said, a three-prong approach, a survivor network, a regional advocate, and a clinician. Because what we know is that women and girls have told us over and over again is we want to receive services from someone who gets it. Someone who gets it better than a clinician, someone who gets it better than an everyday person. And a lot of times they don't want to talk to me, who's a professional. They want to talk to somebody who can really understand it. And so being able to send out a survivor mentor as the first point of contact really helps. And it helps engage women and girls at a different level. Once they're engaged, they're more likely to receive services. They're more likely then to receive the clinical services that they may need to start shifting and helping to have their life look different.
Vicki, it's Tom Hudson. Is your organization involved with any of the Treasure Coast cases, any of the cases that have come up over the last week?
We're not at this time.
So if you are, what kind of advice would you offer those organizations that would ultimately get involved? And what are the women who are involved in these cases? What are they facing?
So I think that at this time, I would really, really advocate to get some legal representation for mm-hmm. all of the women. Because I think that, number one, these women are really, really facing what we would call and a trauma coercive attachment, which is really this attachment that is connected through this power over relationship that we don't recognize, that in many of the countries that they originally come from, they may not trust law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And so if their trafficker here has taught them, oh, you can't trust law enforcement here, you can't trust, you know, all of these organizations, then, you know, that's what they're going to believe if in their own country, that's what they've experienced.
So that's part of why they won't speak with police.
Right. Okay. And so until we can bring individuals that speak their language, that look like them, to start connecting with them, we're not going to start building that trust. Right. And so until organizations, until those that are advocates and wanting to support them start bringing those that speak the language that look like them forward to start advocating for them, we may not start engaging them and having them speak.
They need legal help. They need psychological help. They need a lot of help.
And I think the psychological help is actually the last piece. I think the legal advocacy and the support is actually the first piece.
Let's go to some calls here on the Florida Roundup as we talk about the huge human trafficking sting in Florida. Did you read about it? How the Patriots owner Robert Kraft was busted. Hundreds of women are being trafficked in this state. Hundreds of laborers are being trafficked as well. Maybe thousands. It's 305-995-1800. Damon is in Jacksonville. Hey, Damon. Good morning, or good afternoon, I should say. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I thank you for airing your recent broadcast about the fight against human trafficking. It's something that I've become aware of just recently through my church, partnering with local organizations like Hersong Ministries and the SOAP Project, headed by Jacksonville resident Ms. Sylvia Allman. And it's great to see these organizations stepping up and helping ladies and even young men who have been trafficked. And I just want to thank you for you know, making the public more aware of what's going on. I recently attended a forum at University of at FSCJ back on February 24th, and it was very enlightening to see the statistics and how Jacksonville is a major hub of human trafficking. It's pretty sad, and hopefully more of our residents and our ministries will partner up with these organizations to help fight against it. There is a project through the SOAP organization coming up where they're going to be going to local hotels and motels and helping to educate the management and owners and employees on how to spot human trafficking. So just thought I'd mention that in case you wanted to check into it and share the information with your listeners.
Sure. And would you like to share the information of the organization you just referenced so people can look at that website as well?
One of the ministries is called Hersong Ministries. And I don't have the web. I'm in my car right now. I don't
That's
have
okay.
Right with me.
That's all right.
The other one is SOAP, S-O-A-P. So if you search for SOAP ministry in Jacksonville or on Facebook, Sylvia Almond, she is leading that effort.
Alrighty.
Get more information through that.
Thank you, Damon. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. And as he points out, education is important. Vicky Basra, whether you're educating hotel managers or just the general public, this is something that I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about. If you go into a business and you suspect trafficking, a restaurant, a salon, there are a number of businesses that could fall under this umbrella. There are ways to report other than the human trafficking hotline. Can you share them?
Absolutely. Many of the salons and other or other companies require that the employees have a license. And so a simple way to do that is to actually call the state licensing board of that profession.
Through the Department of Business and Professional Regulation.
Right.
Right.
And they can actually just go in and do a check of the license to see if that actual person, if their license is a legal license. It's a simple check. They go in and they're actually required to do this on a regular basis anyways. They would just go in, they check the names, they check if the licenses are legal, if the name is a legal name, if what they have posted up on the wall is legitimate. And we've actually had conversations with members of the state, and they said, yes, that is something that they would be happy to do and that the general public can do this, is call their office and say, hey, I am concerned that this nail salon is employing victims of human trafficking. Would you be able to go in and check this? And they would be happy to do that.
But what if they're legitimately licensed but still trafficking employees? How can they ascertain that?
Well, they wouldn't be able. So if the employee isn't a legitimate American citizen, mm-hmm.
Or doesn't have a green card, or doesn't have papers.
Right.
Sure.
They
okay.
wouldn't be able to attain a yeah. legitimate yeah. license for them.
Vicky, okay. we know Florida is very active in human trafficking worldwide. In the 50 states, I think it ranks number 3 in terms of the kind of traffic that it sees. And we know Super Bowls are magnets for human traffickers. The next 2 Super Bowls are going to be played in Florida, in Miami in 2020 and in Tampa in 2021. So as you work into the future, what kinds of things are you talking to the public about? Are you engaging with law enforcement in those communities, especially in organizers, as you try to bring attention to human trafficking as it relates certainly not only to Florida, but these big, massive sport events that are these magnets?
Well, I think our push is always our number one push always is policy. We have to change policy. We have to change laws. Once we're able to change policy and laws, then we start on the education. Because no matter if we change policies and laws, if we don't have frontline people reacting and doing things differently, it doesn't matter what the policies and laws say. And so I think that for us, it's really pushing some of the policies and changing some of the laws. Then it would be working with local law enforcement to make sure that they understand how it looks different, how we need to react differently. You know, even if we get hotel managers engaged. So an example recently is wanting to have all hotel employees educated, mm-hmm. right? That all of them be aware, raise awareness, that everybody be educated about what does trafficking look like? How do you recognize a trafficking victim? But if our sheriff's department isn't educated as well, and they arrive at the scene and they're arresting everybody, and so victims are getting arrested along with traffickers, along with Johns, then that law doesn't make a difference, right? Because we're arresting the wrong people. Right. And so I think that we have to be very mindful about how we're creating these policies, how we're educating, and that sometimes a good initiative or a good thought can end up hurting those that it's intended to help.
So much of your work is being done with state legislators trying to
Absolutely.
Change statutes. That is such a big part of this fight. So thank you so much for sharing this insight with us. She's Vicky Basra, Senior Vice President with the Dolores Barr Weaver Policy Center in Jacksonville. Vicky, thank you. And you're listening to the Florida Roundup, coming to you from Florida Public Radio.